Well, the Warriors are re-airing classic games, showcasing the rise of Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. As you've been listening for the last 3 weeks, we're adding an audio companion for this final game as we're turning back the clock to bring you a Warriors archive, The Making of a Champion. It's presented by HPE. It's live on Facebook, and you can go to warriors.com for more details. And to turn back to June 16th, 2015, to help us, it was Game 6 of the NBA Finals, the Warriors in Cleveland. John Michael, the television voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and at the time he was the radio voice of the Cavaliers, and he has joined us graciously to talk about this. And John, it was interesting because I felt coming into this series, that finals, that first year when, you know, LeBron is back, and to me there was a part of me that said, okay, these are two fan bases that really deserve a win. You know what I mean? The Warriors have been a loyal and great fan base for all these years. They finally have a great team to root for, and the Cavaliers have LeBron James back, and as a city had not won a title since the mid '60s. Cleveland Browns. So both of these franchises, John, came into this series, and I think both of their fan bases really deserved to win.
Ben, you're exactly right. It was good to be talking to you. We became so accustomed to talking to each other, and soon as visiting for four consecutive years, good to be talking to you again in these spring-summer months. And you're right. You want to talk about two hungry franchises, two hungry fan bases, and both on their ascent. You know, we of course didn't know it at the time, but that was the first of four consecutive between the two franchises. And you know, obviously what Golden State did was off the charts. I mean, it was a brand of basketball that really hadn't been seen previously in the NBA, and I don't think it's overstating it to say it played a big part in revolutionizing the way today's game is. On the other hand, you have a Cavs franchise the summer previous. He gets LeBron James back, and all of a sudden things change. They make the moves heading into the playoffs. So, man, you're exactly right. Two franchises hungry to get back and to get to the promised land in the case of the Cavs for the first time. And boy, what a series it shaped up to be.
It was a really good series, and I thought the Cavaliers did a great job, especially playing through their injuries. Kevin Love, of course, was hurt. What did that do? What did the Cavaliers miss not having Love?
Well, I mean, you have that prototypical stretch four in Love. You know, he can play with his back to the basket, but he also has the ability to shoot the three. I think, you know, as that series wore on, Tim, you know, you and I talked about it off the air. I think Cavs fans started to realize that they were playing on borrowed time. You know, in game two, the Cavs became the first team in league history to win a finals game playing without its second and third leading scorers from the regular season. And, of course, Kyrie Irving was hurt in game number one. He never returned. The Cavs did pick up that 2-1 lead. But as the series started to wear on, you got the sense, I mean, LeBron was shouldering so much of the load. And yes, he did that during the regular season, but not to the extent he had to do it in the playoffs without the likes of Irving, without the likes of Love. You know, the Warriors team, they were no stranger, of course, as you know, to being down 2-1 in the playoffs. Second round, they were down 2-1 to the Grizzlies, came back and won three straight. So they had been there before, at least in terms of that playoff run, and you just felt that team, the Warriors team, getting stronger and stronger as that final series rolled along.
And, of course, what happened midway through the series for the Warriors was that Steve Kerr made the decision at the behest of his coaching staff to go ahead and take Andrew Bogut out of the starting lineup. Andre Iguodala comes in, and I'm going to be totally honest with you. When the Warriors acquired Andre Iguodala, I knew he was pretty good, but my appreciation for him has truly grown over the years as one of the smarter players in the game. What kind of an impact did you see Andre having on that series?
Well, he was huge. You know, and obviously he comes up and wins the MVP award. That'll speak volumes by itself. But I'm not sure we saw that kind of player, Tim, in Philly. You know, he almost seemed like a different brand of player. And yes, he was at a different phase of his career. But boy, you know, that intelligence coming off that bench with the likes of Sean Livingston, Barbosa had his moments in that series. I think that bench was really the difference and what a key he was Andre Iguodala. I thought David Lee, you know, it was almost, you know, Steve Kerr goes to David Lee later on in that series as well. He provided a spark off that bench, not used all that much at the beginning of the series, used sparingly throughout the playoffs. He pops into that rotation, provided some big minutes, provided some mismatch problems for the Cavaliers with Kevin Love being out of that lineup. So, boy, I thought that bench, which to me the season previous may have been a weak spot for the Warriors, was truly a strength throughout that entire playoff run. And the spark plug was Iguodala. I thought he was sensational the whole way.
Yeah, it's interesting. Iguodala, Livingston, and Festus Ezeli were a big part of the third quarter run that gave the Warriors a lead back after the teams had sort of traded quarters in the first half. And again, like you said about the borrowed time comment, it just seemed like the Warriors were in control at this point of the series and, you know, hung on. Draymond Green with a triple-double. And Draymond's the player that, you know, every other fan base loves to hate. But he's a guy that's a key component of this run for the Warriors because he makes everything work. You know, he can handle the ball, he can defend, he can rebound. And so, to me, I thought he was good. And I thought one of the key guys on the other side of the ledger for Cleveland was Tristan Thompson. The Warriors couldn't keep him off the boards.
Yeah, you're right on both counts. And, you know, it was interesting when you talk about Draymond Green. Steve Kerr, when you look at how he used Draymond Green and still uses Draymond Green, it pays him almost the ultimate compliment how confident he is in him, how much the ball plays through Draymond Green. And let's not forget about the other side either, Tim. I mean, you guys know this well, but somebody in the league, you know, would see the highlights of the Warriors up and down, free, offense here, offense there, obviously dynamic on that offensive end. I think people fail to realize that the Warriors led the league in field goal percentage against as well, and Draymond Green, of course, was a big part of that. I mean, the Warriors, they were the first team in 34 years to lead the NBA in both field goal percentage for and field goal percentage against that season, stretching back to the 76ers back in 80-81. So, you know, when you think about that and you remember that from those teams, I think that's easily overlooked, and Draymond Green was a big part of that. On the Cavs side of the ledger, Tristan Thompson, when you look at the personalities that were on this Cavalier team, guys who needed touches, guys who needed the ball, starting with LeBron. Kyrie's right up there as well. Kyrie took more shots than LeBron did during the regular season. Kevin Love needs his touches as well. Tristan Thompson, to me, was the perfect complement for that team. And, you know, I'll take it a step further, Tim. I don't think the Cavs win the title the next season without the likes of Tristan Thompson for his switchability and versatility and, of course, his ability to hit the glass. So I think he was the perfect, you know, exactly what they needed. Didn't need the ball. Basically, hey, Tristan, go after the ball and then give it to somebody else who's going to shoot it. And he was perfectly fine playing that role throughout all four of those finals runs. And that's a big reason why he got paid. That's a big reason why he's been a Cavalier his entire career and why he was such a big part of those playoff runs. So, yeah, I think this game was a nice example, Tim, when you break it down, highlighting how some of those role players were so influential, not just in this decisive Game 6, but throughout this final series and really throughout all four playoff rounds.
Warriors win 105-97. Curry has 25 points, 8 assists, 6 boards. Iguodala took 20 shots. That had to be a season high. 25 points for him. Draymond the triple-double and 10 apiece off the bench for Festus Ezeli and Sean Livingston. Cavaliers get 32 points, 18 rebounds, 9 assists, and 2 steals from LeBron James, 17 from Timofey Mozgov with 12 rebounds, 15 points and 13 boards for Tristan Thompson, and our old friend J.R. Smith off the bench with 19. And actually, J.R. Smith was an important player against the Warriors. You know, everybody's going to go back to the gaffe he had at the end of the game won a few years later, but he gave the Cavaliers an ability to stretch the floor a little bit and gave them a much-needed three-point component.
You're right, and Cavs fans will remember that in 2016, Game 7, the Cavs were down by, I think, 6 or 8 at the half. J.R. Smith came out and hit 2 quick threes that basically evened the score and got the Cavs right back where they needed to be in hostile territory for that second half in Game 7 of 2016. But he's another perfect LeBron James complimentary piece, right? I mean, what do you do with LeBron James? You surround him with ice water guys who can hit trees under any circumstances, and that pretty much defines J.R. Smith. So he's another huge part of what the Cavaliers did during those runs. And again, it's fun to look back at this because of all the complimentary pieces. You know, it's interesting to meet them. You know, you and I, we laughed about this for 4 consecutive years, but usually as a play-by-play guy, you know your own team at a certain level. And then you strive to get as close as you can to that level with the other 29 teams coming into, you know, the various games. But going to the finals, you know, four consecutive times with the same matchup, it was almost as if you and I had the Cavs and the Warriors and then the other 28 teams knowing each other's team inside and out. And I bring that up because when you look at the box score of the 2015 series, if you will, Tim, you know, and freshest in our minds are the 2018 and the 2017 championship with Kevin Durant, it's almost hard to remember what the Warriors looked like without Kevin Durant.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you look back at those teams, you look at the box score, you're like, wait a second, where's the other scorer?
Yeah.
You know, how were they that dominant in 2015 and in 2016 without the services of Kevin Durant? And to me, that highlights just how good Steph Curry, Klay Thompson,
yep,
and Draymond Green, to me, 1, 2, and 3 at the top of that list were throughout those entire seasons. And in 2015, the year where, again, remember, they didn't have a ton of playoff experience before, certainly no finals experience together, and they did all of that by themselves. And that was a good bench, and we talked about the supporting cast and everything else, but to me, that highlights just how good that trio was, because it's almost hard to remember what they even looked like without the four-time scoring champ joining them for that 2016-2017
season. Well, it's funny, too, because I say this, and I'm biased. I know the guy. I'm friends with him. But I think Steph Curry is probably the most underrated superstar that this league's had in a long time, because I think people still don't accept that he's as good as he is. Even in that series, and people say, well, Andre, you know, got the MVP, and he was well-deserving. But Curry averaged 26 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, almost 2 steals, shot 44% from the field, 38 in the line, and the general opinion was, well, he didn't play that well. It's like, wait a minute. What games are you watching here? You know, I mean,
and you're right, and I agree with you, and it's almost, on our side, almost like the LeBron factor. They do it so well so often and rack up those numbers, you know, with such a great degree of regularity that someone's like, oh, okay, well, that's what they're expected to do each and every game, despite the fact that they're playing against the second-best team in the NBA right now. So I couldn't agree more. It's almost as if those guys made the extraordinary routine for us. You know, you almost have to pinch yourself at times and be like, boy, these guys are averaging 30 points a game against some of the toughest defenses in the league, against teams that are game-planning strictly to take them out of what they do best, which to me, again, is a testament to both what Curry and LeBron did during each of those runs.
Final question for you. For the Warriors, when they won, and the way I tell people is that 2015 championship, it gave, you know, the generation now their Warrior team. The 75 team was their dad's team or their grandfather's team or their grandma's team, you know, and now they had their team that they could root for, and it rewarded a very loyal and dedicated fan base. When the Cavaliers won the following year, what did that do for the Cleveland sports fan?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. I never thought of it that way, but the Cavs had a team in the 90s that was revered, you know, that was loved here in Northeast Ohio with the likes of Larry Nance Sr., Mark Price, Brad Doherty. That group, the problem with them is that they couldn't get past Michael Jordan, you know, and the Chicago Bulls. They had some great teams then, but to me what happened in 2016 transcended basketball. I mean, if any sports fan knows the story in Cleveland, you know, the gloom and doom, what loomed over this, not just the franchise of the Cavs, you know, the stories about the Browns and Jose Bezos with the Indians and everything else, this team just, you know, something or other would cross them up. And, you know, you look at a Cavs team going back to the finals in 2015. They had gone once before, been swept by the Spurs early in LeBron's career. But getting back to the finals, Tim, this is a city that hadn't won a championship since the Lyndon Johnson administration. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. We're not even talking about the next generation. We're talking about grandpas, you know, had to be the ones who remember the last time any team, and it was the Browns, and it was before the Super Bowl ever even came around. So it had been a long time coming. It spelled, you know, hope, I think, you know, hope in this city that, you know, this isn't a city that, you know, always loses. This is a city that can finally get it done, and the return of LeBron James is what sparked that. And then, of course, those four great runs, running up against the Warriors, something I'll never forget. I'm sure you're in the same boat, man. Privileged just to be a part of those four years.
Yeah, the two franchises are forever intertwined because of that. So many great moments and great games in the history of the rivalry between the two. John, thank you so much for breaking it down. Stay safe, and I hope to see you sooner rather than later.
You got it, and have a great summer. Take care.
My thanks to John Michael of the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Tim Roy for Warrior Sound. We hope that you have been enjoying our broadcast of Warrior Archives, The Making of a Champion, presented by HPE. For future broadcasts and for information on future programs, go to warriors.com for all the details. I'm Tim Roy, and this is Warrior Sound. Amaze me.